The Unruffled Rhythm of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m. on this 4th of July Eve. And time for So What's Your Story? The coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that's devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored, award-winning KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown, and Roxy Russell, working the boards, and they'll be stepping in just a bit. You know, since this show started as an open journal nearly 7 years ago, I've been blessed with guests who can stir the soul, ignite curiosity, and kindle imagination in all of us. And very few are able to awaken our spirits better than the vibrant storytelling clergy, with their fresh take on, well, everything, and their signature charismatic style, beckoning even the most passive among us to be drawn in. Now, what draws us in most is what keeps you tuning in. And that, simply put, are their stories of faith and human kindness. A few months ago, a very wise and equally funny Rabbi Laura Sheinkoff shared such tales, and I asked her to send a list of her buddies to be guests on the show, and Reverend Laura Mayo was on the top of her list, so we got her. We had to bribe her, but we got her. Finally, right? We got you here. Absolutely. Yeah. Reverend Mayo is the senior minister of Covenant Church. She's a graduate of Carson Newman College in Jefferson City, Tennessee, and Wake Forest University Divinity School in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Through her work as a minister, Laura works to find ways to use human stories, personal narratives, with biblical stories. Reverend Mayo and her partner, Nicholas Stepp, have two sons, Owen and Grayson, and all four love to sail, work in the yard, and obviously listen to Mom on the radio. Are they listening right now?
They're in bed. They're one in bed? And six. So,
you told them to go to bed when their mom is on the radio? Are you serious?
I did.
Oh, you're mean. You know, you are really mean.
It's true. I own it.
Give me a break. Listen, I know it's a story in and of itself, but in talking about your credentials, I know, Laura, that you also spent a term at Oxford University, and you found that to be a story-rich experience. Now, we're gonna ambush you and get you back on the show to talk about a number of things. But if you can give us a quick synopsis about why Oxford was such an incredible experience.
Well, I can at least give you one story. So for context, I was a 21-year-old college student. And the first couple of weeks, I would have told you that England was just like the States. There was hardly any difference. That the Queen's English and my Appalachian variety were shockingly similar, and that everything was, you know, fine. By the time I left, I would have told you the exact opposite. So one day I was in the bedroom of my boarding house reading a book when Mrs. Batts, the very batty owner of the house, came upstairs and yelled, "Laura, a young man's come round to knock you up." A young man's come round to knock you up.
Yeah. Did everybody hear that?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
What's he look like?
Mm-hmm.
Do I know
mm-hmm.
him?
Mm-hmm.
Send him up. I'm at my leisure. Yeah. It was an experience.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you have to come back because everybody wants to know what you're talking about, including me. As a matter of fact, I want to stop right now and find out. That's the truth. Your friend Rabbi Sheinkoff made it clear that I had to get you on the show. Any guesses about why?
Oh, I love that.
Actually,
Laura.
I know why now,
yeah.
But other than that. Any other guesses?
Well, you know, when we first met, it was one story after another, right? Two women in the religious world and just stories about kids and story about life and story about synagogues and churches and chaplaincy and hospital rooms and, you know, so she knew I was a talker.
Yeah, she's a dynamic personality and she does like to talk.
She does.
And believe me, I know a talker when I talk to one. Your story is about growing up in a Southern Baptist preacher's kid, as a Southern Baptist preacher's kid who became a liberal Baptist minister. Now, I guess it's safe to say that the churches that you attended as a child are significantly different than the church that you now pastor.
Yeah,
that's pretty safe to say.
That's a safe conclusion.
And that's really the core of your story in some ways, and please share it with us.
Yeah. Well, so my story, you know, from Southern Baptist preacher's kid to liberal Baptist minister in 10 minutes or less. Here goes. I was never a very good Southern Baptist. I was sent to my father's office more often than not during Sunday school. One Sunday, the lesson was on Noah. We were past the ark and two by two and the rain and well into what happened next. What happened next is that Noah planted a vineyard, made wine, got drunk, and laid naked in his tent. Ham, one of Noah's sons, saw his father naked. The other two sons walked into the tent backwards with a blanket and covered their father. Ham's son Canaan was cursed for Ham's action. Now, I'm still not clear on what Ham did wrong. Did he look too long? Anyway, I had big problems with this story. Why would the grandson be cursed? Why would anyone be cursed when Noah's the one who got drunk in the first place? I didn't know then about narrative theology. I didn't know you could read the Bible and ask what the story might be communicating. I didn't know that there were feminist readings of such texts, or womenists, or black, or queer readings. I didn't know. What I knew was that it wasn't fair, and I said so, and I was sent to my father's office. Preacher's kids are famous, or rather infamous, for being rebellious, being hellraisers. I think one reason preacher's kids get such a rap is the same reason military children are often called army brats. It's the moving. The moving all the time. We moved 9 times before I was 10 years old. And part of that was my dad's call to ministry. He went to seminary when I was 1 year old. And then, like many young ministers, he moved churches often. When I was 9, we moved to Nashville, Tennessee. We hadn't been there long when my mother died. She was 36 years old, the same age I am now. She was 6 months pregnant, and she had a cerebral hemorrhage. My baby brother was born the day she died. There's so much of that time in my life that I don't remember. My memory is like Swiss cheese. Some things I remember with shocking clarity, and some things I don't remember at all. I can remember my dad waking me up in the middle of the night. I can remember how my mother looked, her eyes set, her nose flaring. I know now that she was brain dead. I remember the smell of the hospital and seeing my baby brother for the first time. He looked like a spider monkey, all arms and legs. He was so small, 1 pound and 15 ounces, with tubes everywhere and an oxygen mask. I remember starting to school, the 4th grade. I was late every day because my dad and I would drop Stephen, my older brother, off at his school, go to the hospital to see the baby. He was in the hospital for months. And then we would go to my school. I remember seeing the newspaper headline, "Brain Dead Mother Gives Birth to Child." I remember what people said to me. People at church were kind and loving with their actions, but often said things that were hurtful. Things like my mother's death was God's will, or that God must have needed my mother in heaven. I couldn't imagine a God who would need my mother more than I did, more than my brothers did. Before this tragedy, I was already struggling with what I was learning at church, already struggling with the Bible, already struggling with how to understand God. My mother's death left me not sure I could believe in God at all, and I knew I couldn't believe in a God who would cause or willingly allow her to die. But I still loved church. I loved the connection. I loved the way rituals like communion seemed to create something transcendent. I loved the Bible. I had so many questions. Questions about the many images and understandings of God. Questions about the various accounts of the same stories, the inconsistencies and the commonalities. I loved to find crazy passages and quote them. In youth group, we were always being asked to quote a life verse, some verse that would help us to live our lives in a positive way. Most kids were quoting things like, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." My life verse for many years was 1 Samuel 5, 6 through 7. "The hand of the Lord was against the city with a very great destruction, and the Lord smote the men of the city, both small and great, and they had hemorrhoids in their secret parts." It got a lot of play. My poor father. I would attack him after church on the drive home each Sunday with questions and commentary about his sermons. I would point out where he had taken a passage out of context, or ask endless questions about a theological perspective he had presented. I wasn't sure what I believed about God, but I was always interested. I couldn't get away from it. I refused to major in religion in college, so I majored in religion. No, I didn't. I refused to major in religion. I majored in literature. But I kept taking religious classes, so I have 3 minors in religion, one in just religion, one in Hebrew, and one in Baptist history. I mentioned my time in Oxford earlier. I was there studying the Reformation as part of my minor in Baptist history. In addition to the really funny things that happened and the intellectual stimulation, I also met my first liberal Baptist person. Before meeting Marty, I didn't even know a person could be a liberal Baptist. And when Marty described herself as such, I asked what I am often asked now, "Isn't that an oxymoron?" And she replied, "Well, here I am." There were only 2 computers for student use in the library, and since we were both Americans studying in Oxford, we were often found side by side at those 2 computers. She was a graduate student studying theology. As I sat next to her day after day and heard her exclaim things like, "I'm such a heretic, I'm going to hell," I began to ask her questions. I soon found that not only were there names for the ideas that I had long held about God, but that I was not alone in having such ideas. It was a revelation. I learned that there was an entire group of progressive Baptists called the Alliance of Baptists. It's hard to describe the power of discovering that I was not alone. It's hard to describe the power, the home of learning that my ideas about God were not as crazy or as far-fetched or as off the wall as I thought they might be. I left England knowing that what I had long been had a category. I left knowing that I was a progressive Christian, a liberal Baptist. I didn't return to Tennessee knowing I wanted to be a minister, but it wasn't long before I was in divinity school and then working in churches. My time in England was pivotal, but it's really not fair to pin it all on that experience. That experience gave me names and dates and theologians, but it didn't give me the ideas. It didn't give me the questions. It didn't create in me the sense that there must be other ways to understand God and still be Christian. Those things had been forming for a long time. Those had been Sunday school lessons on Noah and being sent to my father's office. Those had been the experience of my mother dying and my efforts to make sense of what I was told about God's role in her death. Long before I knew anything about Schleiermacher or biblical criticism, I knew I believed in a God of love, a God I found in narrative, in connection, in ritual.
It's a powerful story.
Thank you.
Very, very powerful story. And it's very difficult to describe part of that story, right, about your mother's death. Have you reconciled it? Have you figured it out? What do you think?
You know, I don't know you ever figure it out, right?
Yeah. When you were sharing that story, what do you want us to think about when you share that part of the story about describing your mother's death? That was extraordinarily poignant, and we thank you for that. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
What would you like us to know? What would you like us to think about? Anything in particular?
The experience of death when you're a kid is so isolating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so isolating. I was in college before I met anyone else who had a mother or father who died when they were a kid.
Yeah.
So I think I would want people to know that if you know a kid ever whose mother or father dies, to find them another person that's happened to.
Yeah. You are listening to So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Reverend Laura Mayo, and this is your host, Hank Rubicek, with team players Roxy Russell and Shannon McKerchie on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Laura, you know, tell us what it really means to be a liberal Baptist. You were funny before saying it's an oxymoron. Hey, it's like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah.
I understand. But give us an example. Give us an example of what it means to be a liberal Baptist.
And you know, it really isn't an oxymoron. I mean, I think part of the deal is we don't know much about Baptist history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this beautiful, rich history. And yes, I have a minor in it, so this could be a whole year's worth of information. But Way back in 1609, when the Baptists started, there were four freedoms that they were focused on: Bible freedom, church freedom, soul freedom, religious freedom. Now, given the current milieu in the United States among Baptists, some of your listeners are now shocked and not believing a word I'm saying, but I promise it's true. Go to the Google machine. It will tell you that I'm telling you the truth. So Bible freedom, that each individual can read the scripture for him or herself and interpret it.
Yeah.
Church freedom, that each church is autonomous, can ordain, can, you know. Soul freedom, that you don't need me, the minister. I'm great. Mm-hmm. I really am. But you don't have to have me. You can talk to God directly.
Yeah.
I can talk to God directly. Yeah. And then religious freedom. I mean, from the beginning, the separation of church and state was a Baptist principle. So all a liberal Baptist is a Baptist who holds these historical freedoms and then partners them with progressive Christian ideas like valuing questions, valuing human diversity, ecumenism, social justice, care for the environment, creative ritual and worship.
Yeah. I knew this would come in handy. I love this quote from Pope Francis, who says, "The people of God want pastors, not clergy acting like bureaucrats or government friends."
Does
that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes great sense. And I think that that summarizes what you were saying. That is a very powerful way of describing it, because people don't think about liberalism and baptism in the same sentence.
Yeah, not normally.
There's just no way. Yeah. But that makes very, very good sense. And I also like the way that you weave biblical passages into human stories. So now I know what you mean when you talk about human stories and biblical passages and demonstrating how they're inextricably related to each other.
Yeah.
And you use them in your preaching and you use them in your teaching. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I often argue with the Bible. You know, this Sunday we're at the lectionary, which is a thing that tells us here are your four scriptures you can choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a Baptist church, so I don't have to pick among those, but I often do. So there's a passage from Romans about sin that I will be preaching about this Sunday. And so I agree with about a third of it, and I argue with about two-thirds of it. So it's a discussion. But what you read in the Bible brings up your own stories and your own narratives. And so where can we find ourselves in those words?
How does your father feel about you becoming a liberal preacher? That's obviously a question we all want to hear an answer to.
You know,
how do you respond to that?
My dad is a great guy. You would like him a lot. And my coming out as a liberal was so gradual. You know, it's not like I came home one day and
said... It's amazing
said,
how we use the word coming out.
Yeah.
Right? The term coming out as a liberal. Yeah.
It kind of feels like
it. Feels that way.
I mean, I think hard conversations...
And you were a closet liberal, probably.
Well, I was for a long time.
Yeah.
Really, because I didn't know what it was. I mean, I didn't know the word.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think all coming out is a hard conversation, and my dad and I have had many, many hard conversations.
Yeah.
And he loves me and I love him.
Yeah. You know, British playwright Henry Fielding wrote, "For clergy are men as well as other folks." Now, tough question, but how would you complete this phrase? For clergy are women as well as?
Other folks. I just don't feel the need to mess with Fielding. Yeah. After all, a man who said love and scandal are the best sweeteners for tea knows a thing or two.
Yeah, he sure does. He sure does. Beautiful, beautiful.
And anyone who knows a clergy person, man, woman, trans, anyone who knows us knows that we're just people.
Yeah.
It's when clergy or anyone else tries to be someone that they're not that they get into trouble. Just ask Reverend Dimmesdale.
Yeah. Extraordinarily well said. Roxy, complete this phrase. The best place in the world to learn to tell stories is?
The Houston Storytellers Guild.
Right, very good. And you win the $500 prize. But I had to say something. Okay.
Well, the Houston Storytellers Guild, of course, where you'll develop your telling skills while surrounded by the nicest people in town. Their monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. And always check out the Houston Storytellers Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for updates and all the fun happenings.
Roxy, Shannon, what's cooking on Facebook?
everyone needs to get to our So What's Your Story Facebook, and where I post helpful articles, upcoming literary events around town, and interact with our fans. And there are a lot of them.
Yeah, there really are, aren't there?
Yes.
I mean, did you pay these people to be fans? I mean, where do they all come from?
Definitely
they
not.
They emerged. They just emerged.
They know out of the fog.
They found us. And you guys rock. You guys really are the two who helped make this happen. And thank you so much. And make sure you like us on the way out. I'm sure you told people that. But my God, make sure you like us on the way out. And, you know, I have to tell you something. Facebook and I are still a little bit strangers. And I have to thank Shannon tremendously because she is an unbelievable researcher. And she's done a great job at really talking about what storytelling is as an art and a science, and why it needs to be recreated and resurrected as an art form, especially in a wonderful city like Houston, where diversity and culture are key. And storytelling really is the bedrock of how those blend and connect. And you do a great job, Shannon. Thank you. Now, our guest next week is educational consultant Dr. Sharon Washington, who's astonishing story about the tragedy behind her daughter's death is a story you're not going to want to miss. I know I say that every week, but this is a pretty incredible story. And I'd like to also share with all of you out there, this is the first time that she's going to be sharing this story. She's written a book about the murder of her daughter. And I find this to be one of the most poignant narratives I've ever heard or know about, and I'm just letting you know that you're going to want to listen to her because she needs an audience. Really a pretty spectacular show, I believe. Well, Laura, this is a tough one. It's been said that human character is on the decline. Now, I happen to think that, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it, but I have to tell you something. I don't think that the human condition is what it once was. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And there is sort of a degeneration of the human condition, at least that's what many people believe. It's impossible to comment in a day, let alone just a few moments, but lend us a little bit of focus. What are we missing? What are we missing as people?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think people have been hurting themselves and each other for a very long time. And I think people have been helping each other for a very long time. So after every disaster, you know, there's amazing stories of people helping one another. And I really think connection is the thing, right? You know, yeah. So thousands of stories I've read and heard, and in my own experience, it's connection that's crucial to the state of our condition, yeah. To the state of humans.
But we're not connecting enough.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
so
really not.
Our connection to each other, to the divine, to our best selves, to the spiritual. But where do we find that? And I think so often when we don't find that connection, we don't find love and we don't mm-hmm. find authenticity and yeah. we don't find wholeness. And yeah. So even if the ritual is lighting a candle each morning in gratitude, mm-hmm. ritual is a way to connect to yourself and to something spiritual. And yeah. it really, I think, is significant.
Do something selfless every day. Take a few moments. Mm. And do something spiritual.
Yeah.
Do something that's designed to connect with someone else. Reflect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something introspective. This is Dr. Hank and Roxy and Shannon. You're enjoying guest storyteller Reverend Laura Mayo on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston or KPFT.org if you are listening online. But whatever channel you chose, we are glad you are here. Very, very glad. Now, Roxy, you were raised Lutheran, okay?
Yes.
I'm going to throw this at you. Now, when do you turn to religion for answers?
Well, I feel like...
Other than trying to pass a test.
I feel like times of trouble and strife is also very, I feel like, common, almost like a knee-jerk reaction. However, I found more that I turn it for understanding people. And understanding different religions and understanding the way people look at their religion mm-hmm. versus the way I look at mine.
Yeah.
So I think I use yeah. it more now for like understanding people.
Basis for comparison.
Yeah,
in
basis
some
for
ways.
Comparison
yeah.
because yeah. I believe all faith is faith no matter yeah. what you believe in.
Yeah.
So just a
That's
way of
cool.
understanding.
Very good. Very good. You always shock me, Roxy. You're a very intelligent person. I never thought you weren't. I never thought you weren't, but she's surprising, you know? What can I tell
you? I like
to
surprise you. What can I say?
You really are. You're surprising. You're surprising. You're surprising. Shannon, what about you?
I turned to religion to recenter.
Recenter.
Recenter. Come back.
You know, you two have been reading books, haven't you? Both of you clearly have been reading books.
What do you say? We get paid the big bucks to read the books here.
I gotcha. I understand. Yeah. Recentering.
Yes, sir.
I like it. I like it.
Yes, I never was much very religious until this last year, but where I've, you know, a lot of hardship came along, so I realized how much I really did need the world around me, and to focus back on what's great, and, you know, why we're here.
Yeah, I turned to religion when I should turn to it a lot more. I used to turn to it all the time with trying to address a lot of very difficult things in my life. I'm embarrassed to say that I don't turn to it enough, but it shows like this, frankly, that give me the impetus to do it again and a lot more often. I love the idea of lighting a candle every day. I love that. I love that. I wanted to share this message from Christian youth leader Israel Ayavor, who believes the clergy of the world are like the moon. The moon shines, but it does not produce its own light. It reflects the light illuminated onto its surface by the sun and is never proud to say, "I am the source of light." God shines through us. Hence, he deserves the glory, not us. Reverend Laura Mayo, you've illuminated our lives with your story and your wisdom. And we thank you so, so very much for taking the time to join us this evening. And you told me that you wouldn't mind coming back, so we're going to kind of hold you to that.
Sure, I would love to.
We are absolutely going to hold you to it. And, you know, next week, remember, everybody, we're going to be focusing on that heart-rending episode on So What's Your Story, when Dr. Sharon Washington talks about her daughter's tragic death to a public audience for the very, very first time. And that public audience, obviously, is us. Roxy, Shannon, thank you so much. The two of you make me smile sometimes. Yeah, you do. You're all right. Yeah, you guys are great. And to all of you that make us a part of your week, thank you for making So What's Your Story, Houston's original story show, a really, truly great show. I want you to have a safe and festive 4th of July. Stay exactly where you are because Scooter is up next with the inner side to complete the backside of this power hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.